Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for January 27th, 2013. We've had a week in which they've had the presidential inauguration. Hillary Clinton reemerges on Capitol Hill. And according to SNL, Joe Biden's hosting something called the Biden Fest or Biden Bash at Dover Speedway. But we're probably not going to talk about any of that because this is a Southern political show. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Welcome to the show, Catherine Smith.
Hello, everyone.
And welcome, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, we're going to have in about 15 minutes Lowell Feld of Blue Virginia. He's going to talk to us about all the happenings of Virginia. If you've been following really national or southern politics, you probably heard about the two or three events just this week in Virginia. And then, of course, he'll tell us about some other stuff as well. On Friday, we were kind of rocked in Georgia with the retirement of Saxby Chambliss. Then yesterday, Tom Harkin also decided to resign. We may mention that as well, or retire, I should say, not resign. He's going to finish his term like Chambliss. But let's first get into Saxby Chambliss. He decided not to run for re-election. There's been different reasons why he's not. He says he's frustrated with the process. I have a sneaking feeling it's bad internal poll numbers. Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the two. He realized that the Tea Party was going to come at him. Somebody from the right was going to come at him, whether it be Price or Brown or who. And I think he had just basically had enough. I find it ironic, though, that 10 years ago he was the Mr. Partisan that was doing all the biting when the way his campaign attacked Max Cleland. And then those that helped him do the biting are those who now turn on him. He finds himself caught in the crosshairs, I guess, between a government that seems more and more less partisan and a right wing that is more and more engaging in these ideological purges, shall I say, of those they consider to be too moderate. And unfortunately, he is now one of those, right?
Yes, a politician with nowhere to go. Catherine?
Well, to paraphrase Heidi Klum from Project Runway, in fashion, just like in politics, one day you're in and the next day you're out.
I mean, he's really out. Yeah.
Yeah, he's out. And I think, I suspect that, well, I'm not privy to any of the information. I suspect it was internal polling or maybe even just, you know, calls from the party saying, you know, we don't think you're going to make it. Maybe you should step away and let somebody else run. All I can say is I'm praying for Paul Brown.
Yeah, we'll get into the candidates that may run, but, you know, let's keep on with the Chambliss part of it. You know, this is a guy that he won in 2002, won re-election, you know, pretty easily in 2008. I mean, he did get pushed to the runoff, but you got the sense that was all the president, you know, him being on the ballot. I never really thought that it was more than that. But it's like this guy has no real fan club, if you will. I wouldn't consider him a moderate, but in Southern GOP terms, I guess you might call him a moderate because that's how conservative the party is. So because of the way he defeated Max Cleland, you know, he has no fans on the left. And then half of the Republicans don't like him because he's not conservative enough. So that leaves him with, you know, maybe, say, 25% of the electorate that doesn't dislike him. And then those folks probably aren't real passionate about him. you know, if you got into, you know, starting a Saxby Chambliss fan club, a diehard supporters, you get the idea that guy would have a smaller club than, you know, Nathan Deal or Johnny Isaacson, Zell Miller, Kasim Reed. I mean, just cross an aisle to different politicians. But this guy's got nowhere to really go for his base. Tim, I sound like you had some thoughts on that.
Yes, I did. I know you're a fan of the Chris Matthews Show, as I am. You might have noticed this morning, you know, he does a segment called Tell Me Something I Don't Know. Of his guest. And Chuck Todd, who was on there just this morning now, said that Saxby Chambliss's best friend up there happens to be John Vane, his running buddy, which I wasn't aware they were that tight. But he said, now that Chambliss is gone, look for Boehner, perhaps, to do the same, along with some other old-timers who have just had enough. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's funny that Todd just suddenly blurted that out. Just thought I'd add
that is interesting. A guy from Ohio that's in the other chamber. I mean, maybe they came up, I guess. What did Saxby Chambliss, did he win in 96, 98, somewhere around there? He served in that Macon district for a few years before moving to the Senate. So maybe they got close to that point.
Yeah, could be.
That must have been, you know, maybe that's the connection. But
One more question. If you saw the Political Insider, Galloway published a picture made apparently last week in a Washington, D.C. bar, and there was Chambliss huddled up with Senator Warner. They were all alone, engaged in very deep conversation. Wouldn't you have loved to have been a fly on that wall?
Yeah, I mean, you do wonder if this guy's, you know, if he's getting so upset at the way the Tea Party does, if for the next 2 years, this could be a go-to vote or go-to at least ask for the president on, you know, legislation that's close, like if he needs another vote or a Republican vote, does he try Chambliss? Because he's got nothing to lose. You know, he's totally free for the next 2 years. Catherine, do you think that Chambliss could use his last 2 years to be somewhat of a middle-of-the-road senator?
I think that a lot of that depends on whether he has any future political aspirations.
I'm going to read into this. If he does have future political aspirations, he doesn't need to be one that maybe
he doesn't need to be cuddling up with the president if he has, you know, some idea about running, I don't know, being a vice presidential candidate or being, running. I mean, I can't imagine he'd run for governor, but you never know. I think that if he has some aspirations like that, then it would not be wise for him to cuddle up with the president or other Democrats. But wasn't he a member of the, you know, gang of
trouble. Yeah, him and Lindsey Graham, they were in this gang at McCain in that gang, and I guess that three Democrats, Pryor, Warner, and help me out with the other one.
I was just going to say this has been building a long time, wasn't it? Like, after we'd been on the air about a year, we were all on here discussing how he was getting booed, and I believe that was in 07, down at the Georgia Republican Convention when he got up there and endorsed, a guest worker program, what Bush was advocating at the time, and they practically booed him off the stage. That bunch has had it in for him for a while. And maybe he's just had enough of it.
Maybe he really has had enough.
Yeah, he is from Moultrie, and that's a big agricultural community that depends on guest worker labor. Yeah. Not even so much, you know, Hispanic immigrant labor, but guest worker folks that come in just seasonally. So therefore, that was something he actually, I guess, understood better than maybe some Georgians would, and got booed on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's interesting to see what his legacy will be. I think if he decided to go the path of where he helps get things done, that may be the best way to secure his legacy in a more positive light, because, like I said, right now he's got nowhere real place to go. And as far as running for another office, unless it was on some type of, you know, independent ticket, and we know those are pretty far-fetched, I don't see a real angle for him anyway, because he's not going to go anywhere in the Republican primary if he can't even hold his own seat that he currently holds. I mean, winning a new seat you would think would be much harder, particularly if he's 2-4 years removed from it. And then, of course, I mean, he's not in any position to switch parties by any means.
Oh, no.
Right. Not that close to the middle. And because, once again, because of the way he defeated Max Cleland, there's just no real angle. It's not like he, you know, just ran on the issues and it just wasn't our year. And the crazy thing about it, if you think back to 2002, there's a decent chance that he could have run the right way and won. I don't know. Maybe he had to do what he had to do to win, didn't make it right. But you get the sense that 2002 was such a bad Democratic year, where Roy Barnes lost and had much more money than Sonny Perdue and was on a state-level ticket, not a federal-level ticket, that he might could have won the thing anyway. So who knows? Well, let's turn in the last 4 minutes before Lowell calls in to talk about who may run. And Tim, you've already mentioned Tom Price. I guess let's handle the Republican side of this thing first. And I get the idea you may have 6-8 candidates. And according to the polling from Tom Jensen, Herman Cain could win this thing, at least the primary side of things.
But oh,
I think that
Lord.
Would be somebody that could be more playing
no,
in the general election.
Please.
But it could be a sitting congressman like a Lynn Westmoreland, Tom Price, Jack Kingston, that would be much harder to defeat. Who are some of the names you're thinking will run on the Republican side?
Well, there's a new name emerged, too, in the last couple of days. And Galloway also mentioned this. What about Sonny Perdue?
Yeah, I heard that.
What about him? There's a possibility. You talk about a guy that could come in and shake the race up, at least on the Republican side. He might be the guy. What do y'all think of that?
It'd be interesting. Obviously, I think he's got more of a base, if you will,
a
political army. And a lot of it's probably, some of it may actually be shared with Saxby Chambliss, because their hometowns are probably within about, you know, 90 miles from each other, Moultrie and not Warner, Perry, if you will. So they're pretty close to each other in that central southern area of Georgia. Catherine, what are some things you're thinking?
Like I said, I'm hoping for Paul Brown to win the primary. I think that's the only shot Democrats have to win the seat.
Not Herman Cain?
Oh, no, Herman Cain would win.
Yeah, I agree with her on that. Yeah.
So you think Herman Cain, with the issues that unraveled his presidential campaign, if he could somehow win, and I don't necessarily think he can, you think that he could beat a good Democrat? I mean, I don't mean a Democrat that's good. I mean a good candidate as a Democrat next to his title.
I do.
Well,
think he could win.
Yeah.
So do I.
I don't know.
Maybe not in any other state, but in Georgia, I think he could win. I say that because he's on the radio now. He took Neil Bortz's place on 7:50 in the morning. And people call in and love him. I mean, I know that the callers are the, you know, you don't get, it's not a good sample. But he has a lot of listeners, and people really like him. And I think there's an advantage to him being African-American and running as a Republican. I think that, I think people, and, you know, he had some national prominence. His little problems with the girlfriend, I think, are forgotten, and I don't, you know, they would come back up, but I don't think anybody cares about that stuff much anymore.
Well, it seemed to undo his presidential campaign, because he was the leader at one point, and we certainly know that they went on fire for bits.
But it undid his presidential campaign also because the other candidates were marginally smarter and more capable. But also, I mean, I'm not sure that he could win a presidential campaign in Georgia, but a Senate campaign, I think he could win.
Okay, yeah. Catherine, did you just tell me that Jack Kingston, Austin Scott, Tom Graves, and Tom Price aren't marginally smarter than Herman Cain, too?
That ain't it.
Oh, no, I was talking about the presidential.
I'm just saying, they're all marginally, maybe more than marginally, smarter than Herman Cain, too. They're probably got a better command on living.
But nobody knows who they are.
But,
nobody knows who they are except the people that are in their districts.
Yeah,
but this is the midterms, David. This is the midterms, and the Tea Party will be very strong in the midterms.
Yep.
They gave their heart to Cain already. He would be a very formidable candidate.
Yes. Well, let's go ahead and move north a little bit. Welcome to the show, Lowell Feld. Welcome back, Lowell.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, doing good. You know, Lowell, I backed you up 5 minutes so we could finish talking about Chambliss. We didn't come close, but that's okay. Because honestly, as interesting as Chambliss is, what is going on in Virginia is just, you know, stunning.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get to it. The first thing is most people were celebrating either Martin Luther King Day or Inauguration Day, but the Virginia Senate was pretty busy. Let me just start off before we talk about what they did. Why in the world were they even holding session on Martin Luther King Day?
It's a regular, you know, work day in Virginia. Friday before is actually, my understanding is Lee Jackson King Day. This goes back years. You know, there's been these controversies all through the southern states.
Okay.
About Martin Luther King Day, well, that was the compromise, right? So the legislature was in session on Monday. I mean, it was a regular...
Help me out. Yeah, Jackson King Day. I'm taking that's Martin Luther King and Robert E. Lee. Who's
Robert E.
Jackson?
Lee and Stonewall Jackson.
Stonewall. Stonewall Jackson has a holiday, huh? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You know, we carved a part of a mountain to him, but I didn't know he had his own holiday.
he's got
in Georgia... Even though we're probably more conservative than Virginia, since it's Martin Luther King State, you know, we kind of have to take the day off from the legislature. So that's why I heard that. I was like, well, why in the world were they even meeting?
Stonewall Jackson is actually from Virginia, so he's from Lexington, Virginia. So they were meeting. They had their regular, you know, session. It wasn't a surprise or anything. But what happened was the state Senate is tied 20-20, Democrats, Republicans. Well, one Democrat, State Senator Henry Marsh, who's 80 years old, he's been a civil rights champion for his whole life. He's fought for civil rights. He's African American. He went up to Washington, D.C. to see Barack Obama sworn in, for the second time as president. And while he was gone, clever Republicans, they noticed, hey, the Democrats are down now 20-19, and we can pull some fast one here, you know? We can pull a fast one. So that's what they did. I got to give them a little credit in a way for not the substance of it at all, but just for being ruthless and clever and taking advantage of their opportunity, I guess. And so they pounced, and they basically rammed through this unconstitutional, that's a question, mid-decade redistricting plan of the state, which we just had redistricting. You know, it's supposed to be every decade after the census, but they decided we're going to do another one. And it's not just minor tweaks here you're talking about. This is totally redistricts the entire state Senate so that it goes from a 20-20 tie to probably after the next elections in 2015, it could be, you know, 27 Republicans out of 40, or who knows. So that's what's going on. I mean, so right now where that's at is they rammed it through the state Senate. Now, the House of Delegates is controlled overwhelmingly by Republicans, but they're not so sure what they want to do with this bill because basically the Democrats have said if you push this through, that's it. We're done. You're not going to get anything accomplished whatsoever. We are not working with you on anything. And so Bob McDonnell, who's our governor, who's in his last year, is only one term you're allowed to, you know, run in, consecutively in Virginia for governor. So this is it for him. He wants a legacy. He wants to get something done, I mean, in this last year, and he sees it all going up in smoke if this turns into a confrontation, like a really, really bad confrontation where the Democrats will refuse to do anything. And so he's not happy with this. He doesn't want this. He's not happy with this. So it's kind of stalemated right now. Not sure what's going to happen. In the next few days, I guess we'll find out. But it's really, like, fascinating. It was a huge story. I mean, this thing got – this was on, like, Rachel Maddow and the Ed Show and all the newspapers. You know, it's just like this blew up. And
yes. Yeah, I was on Twitter during the inauguration, and it was everybody was commenting on the inauguration and the speech and the clothes and everything, but that kept popping up throughout the day.
Yeah, well, that's actually an interesting point too. You know how the story broke? It wasn't the quote unquote mainstream media. It was broken by the blog. Ben Tribbett, who runs the blog Not Larry Sabato, here in Virginia, he broke it on Twitter. And that's how stories break these days, you know, on social media. And then I saw that almost immediately because I'm addicted to Twitter or whatever. Follow Ben Tribbett's, you know, Twitter feed. And I immediately, like, started typing up a blog post and posted that, like, 10 minutes later on Blue Virginia. And then I was just looking to see how long it would take the traditional media to finally weigh in. Like, the Washington Post, it was 12, 14 hours later that they – maybe longer. It was in the middle of the night. So it could have been even like 18 hours later that they finally put up a very short story with like no detail or anything. We had like all this detail. We started putting up videos and audio because we were getting this stuff, you know. Like the blogs were way ahead of them, of the mainstream media. I just love that, I got to say.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've seen redistricting a lot of places. We had it in Georgia, of course, Texas is a famous case. I almost think they need to do something about redistricting because either side, even if it's Democrats just in the middle of saying, hey, we want to rip up the maps that were, you know, done by the right process. But then the second thing I think about is you say that the Senate's 20-20 and that this is the way, you know, the Republicans chose to behave when a guy was missing for the inauguration of the president. And that doesn't even matter if he's a civil rights icon, if he's a Democrat, the president's Democrat. I mean, that's a reason people miss. But then what if somebody gets sick during the session? What if somebody's, you know, daughter's graduating from college out west? Mm-hmm. Or any good reason to miss a vote? Is this how the Senate in Virginia is going to behave? Where they just throw up controversial bills just for that day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this happens all the time that people have to be out for a few hours or for a day or whatever for any of the things you said or a million other reasons. And so, yeah, I mean, if they're going to act like this, then how can you trust them? You can't ever, no one can ever walk out, you can't go to the men's room or something? I mean, you can't, like, ever leave. You can't. I mean, who knows what they'll do while you're in there? You better hurry up. You know, it's crazy. I mean, it's not the thing is once the trust completely breaks down, I don't know where you go. It's really bad. I mean, some of the speeches when the Democrats were outraged and they got up and, you know, you had people accusing them of plantation. A leading African American state senator got up and accused the Republicans of said this was like plantation politics. And, you know, it got really ugly. It was really bad. And people were just Democrats were livid. And then Republicans came back and they were outraged at that they were being accused of this, you know. And they said, we are not doing anything wrong here whatsoever, you know.
Right. So they didn't have that bill all written and ready to go as soon as they saw that they were down one vote?
Right. Oh, they did. No, they did. They had the districts all drawn.
They had
the districts all they had to do this, you know, they do this by computer mapping, whatever. They figured out these districts so that they gerrymandered the state so that they get as many Republican districts as possible. Remember, this state went for Obama now twice in a row, went for Tim Kaine for Democrats. So this state is not a red state. But if you gerrymander districts enough, you can, because the thing is, most Democrats live in urban areas. That's just the way it is. Like, and so you can pack them in there and have these like compact districts, and then the way, if you gerrymander them properly, you can end up with like, you know, four, like 27 out of 40 Republican state Senate seats, even though the state is like 52 to 48 Democratic in a presidential year. You know, it's so that's where we're at on that one. Sure if it's going to happen, but my betting is, my gut feeling is that it probably won't, because Bob McDonnell realizes that he will not get anything done. And he really wants to get something done badly, because he wants to run for president, I think, in 2016, and he needs something to run on. So, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll get to Bob McDonnell and how he, perceives his future. I know we got more controversial bills out of Virginia, one that probably has more national implications, both as a blueprint for other states and even if a close election just by itself. I think Tim's going to ask about that. Tim, ask away.
Yeah, I was going to say last year your legislature entertained a bill that would have required a woman wanting an abortion to get an ultrasound. Now, many talking heads thought that might have cost Governor McDonnell the VP slot.
Mm.
Is it possible that the governor now worries that this new redistricting bill that's coming along might kill his national ambitions?
Right. Well, that's what I was saying a little earlier. I think, you know, he definitely has national ambitions. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, he wants to have something when he runs to point to that he did this and he did that, and he did whatever. So, like in this case, right now, the big thing in Virginia is transportation. He put forth a transportation proposal, which personally I think is really stupid, and sort of the Democrats totally oppose it. Well, so far they have. And
does he want to build an underground freeway?
Yeah, I mean, might as well. No, this bill, he wants to eliminate the gas tax completely. Why? Who knows? But, like, he wants to eliminate the gas tax and then replace that by increasing the sales tax to fund transportation. Now, how that makes sense, I have no idea. Don't you want to have a user fee, like gasoline, you pay for the roads? The people who use the roads pay for the roads, right? You know? Like, so why would you have people who are buying clothes or books or whatever have to pay for the road through a sales tax? It's ridiculous. But
Lowell, is that the same reason that what David was talking about in leading into me was this new bill that changed the allocation of your electoral vote? And that came out of nowhere. The governor didn't know it was coming.
Right.
And apparently, he is jumping up and down in such opposition to it that thing has apparently stopped dead in its tracks. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, that thing seems to be dead. Not just McDonald, but actually I think it's less McDonald jumping up and down and being angry about it than there were two Republican state senators. Now, I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and say, sure, they did it based on principle. They really believe that this was the wrong thing to do. Who knows? Maybe they did. Let's just give them that. All right. So two Republican state senators said they're going to vote no. Well, that's it. It's dead because no Democrat's going to vote yes. So it's 20-20 tie in the state Senate. So that was it. So then McDonnell comes in and says, "Oh, I'm against it." You know, well, he knows it's dead already. You know, it's like I'm not sure, you know, how important it is once something's already dead to come in and kick it again. And then Ken Cuccinelli also now, because he opposes it too. You know, so to me, what Cuccinelli's doing is saying, "Oh, see, like I'm actually not that crazy. You know, I'm kind of moderate." You know? See, like you know, here's another example of how saying, "No, you're not that bad." Because the thing's dead anyway, so you can, it's a free free move or whatever. You know.
Okay. Well, let me toss it over to Catherine for some more questions. Catherine?
Sure.
Hey, thanks a lot for being on tonight. We appreciate
it. Sure.
I don't have any prepared questions, but what's I think the next – well, I, you know what? I'm going to send it back to David because I think he's got a little schedule. I called in late, so I didn't get the pre-show
plan. Unprepared for class.
Yeah, I know.
And, of course, we wasted pre-show talking about something that's really inside baseball to Georgia that we weren't even going to talk about on the show, so we did a great job helping Catherine out. So that's kind of our fault, too.
Nice. Nice, guys.
Plan. We've heard about this thing, you know, being floated in possibly Michigan and Wisconsin were two of the states I heard. I didn't even think Virginia was going to be the first place they went with this thing. Why do you think the Virginia leaders in the Republican Party decided to use, I guess, Virginia as the guinea pig? Because obviously one state by itself probably didn't get it done. They need to do it in, say, 7-10 battleground states.
Well, I mean, what the Republicans, and, you know, this has been endorsed at pretty high level. The head of the Republican National Committee, Reince Priebus, I still can't pronounce the guy's name. Why would you name your kid R-E-I-N-C-E? I can't. Whatever his name is. Reince. Anyway, he endorsed it. And what they're looking for is states that went for Obama at the presidential level, but that are controlled by Republicans at the gubernatorial and legislative level. So you've got, like, Pennsylvania has a Republican governor, so that's one state, but they went for Obama. So they're looking to do it there. They're looking to do it in Michigan, Wisconsin. These are all blue states presidentially, but they have Republican governors. And Virginia is another one that went for Obama twice now. And it looks like it's very well may be that at the presidential level that Virginia is looking kind of blue. And so, you know, they're like, well, if we change the way we allocate the electoral votes, at least we'll get some electoral votes, you know, because now we're going to get no electoral votes out of Virginia and Pennsylvania and these other states. So if they did that to all those states, it would totally – but not to any, like, of the red states, you know. So then – it would make it really much more difficult for a Democrat to win the White House in future elections because, you know, you're taking these blue states and you're reducing the number of electoral votes that a Democrat's going to win from them. So it's but you're not doing it with all the states. You're not doing it consistently.
No.
That's
right.
My big problem with it. You know, we should have a uniform, to me, national system of allocating our if we even are going to have electors, which I guess we still are, then I think we should have a uniform national system of allotting them or allocating them. So, but anyway, that's why they're choosing Virginia, because they went for Obama twice now. So, you know, they want to get some electoral votes out of Virginia.
Yeah, I think people are going to start looking more and more harshly at the Electoral College. I mean, if you study the history of it, this was, you know, started by people that didn't trust the people. I mean,
mm-hmm.
They didn't think the average Joe, and there was no Jank then, and there was,
no.
It was only white property men. But they didn't even trust all the white property men to vote.
No.
So, I mean, I don't think this is a 2013 America type of plan. And so, you know, maybe it'll get critical analysis, because there's a professor out at Stanford that when they were doing the class that we talked about, he mentioned how a vote in California counts far less than a vote in, say, Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
So right there, if you live in a more populous state, your vote counts less than if you live in a much, less populous state. So that's another issue, irregardless of trying to monkey with the numbers. And right now we have Nebraska and Maine with this little system, which, because there are so few electoral votes, the one in Maine, there's one district that could be marginally more Republican in the state. Same thing with the Omaha district, Nebraska. It doesn't affect much, although it may cause those two states to need to look at what they're doing. Maybe they need to get back in line with the rest of America if we're going to have the Electoral College plan. So it's certainly this sneaky little play that the Republicans are using. And I have a feeling that some of this stuff's going to add up where swing voters and maybe moderately leaning Republican voters that maybe like their policies might not like the way they do business, and they're going to turn some people off if they continue to do this. And I'm sure Virginia in 2013 is going to be the first test case. I mean, what are people saying on how this is going to affect both the statewide governor's race and the delegates and Senate races there?
Well, no Senate races this year, but this year we have every House of Delegates seat, 100 House of Delegates seats, they're all up, and we have the governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general. So it's a very important election year in Virginia. And you're right. I mean, these are the types of things that could potentially really start getting Democratic voters, the type of voters particularly who vote in presidential years but don't tend to vote in these odd or off years, but they're definitely presidential voters. Well, this is the type of thing that could get them really riled up. And you get them riled up, and then they'll say, well, you know what, I'm going to go vote, and I never voted in these elections before, but I'm going to damn well vote in this one. And that's what we want. I mean, Democrats would love that. I mean, I'm like, please, Republicans, push some more ultrasounds and push some more of this crazy legislation and get our people so angry that they turn out in huge numbers this November and toss their butts out of Richmond, you know. Fine with me. Now, the danger is they'll actually pass some of this stuff. Minor detail there, but that's the risk.
Hey, can I jump in with another question?
Sure.
It's about the next congressional elections. Arthur Davis, you know, former Democratic congressman from Alabama, is now a resident of your state, and he switched parties.
Rumor
is out there that he's considering running again for something. Is there anything to that?
Yeah, oh yeah, very much so. I think he's either going to run for Congress in probably the next, in 2014, in the, most likely in the 11th congressional district, which is held by a Democrat, Jerry Connolly. It's Fairfax County, a suburb of Washington, D.C., and it's blue. It's generally blue county. The district is pretty solid at this point for the Democrats. That's one rumor. And the other rumor I just heard, I think it was today or yesterday, that he's thinking about maybe not doing that and maybe running for state Senate in 2015 or something. But he's around, and he is definitely thinking about running for something, which will be... I mean, personally, I think he'd get his butt kicked by Jerry Connolly, so fine, go ahead. I mean, like, I will enjoy that one. It will be hilarious.
Yeah,
and,
I can honestly say Alabama's loss is also your loss.
I think that guy is pretty much everyone's loss. I don't even know if he's the Republicans' gain, really, because I'm not sure how much he benefits them, but he just seems to be a sore loser. Who, he couldn't win as a Democrat, and so now he's switched parties, and he's going to try see if his luck is any better as a Republican. But I mean, good luck.
I think sore loser should be the subtitle of the Republican Party these days. All these techniques that they're trying are just convey the image of sore losers to me, right? I mean...
Well, it conveys the image to me that they feel like they can't... They seem like what they're saying is they can't win on the merits. They can't just make their argument that their party has the better ideas.
Right.
Their party has a better argument to make. And they can't just do that. So they have to, like, try to game the system. They have to try to, fix the Electoral College or gerrymander. You know, the fact is that Democrats won more votes nationally for Congress in 2012 than Republicans did, I think by like a million.
Yeah,
and yet
that's right.
They control the House of Representatives. I'm talking about for the House of Representatives. I mean, and they control it, though, because they gerrymandered those districts so well. So this is part of – now, in fairness, okay, I know this is a – we're all Democrats and, whatever. This is a Democratic show. But in a little bit of fairness, Democrats did the same thing. I mean, in Maryland – like, they totally gerrymandered that place. It's crazy. It looks like the original. I don't know if you've ever seen that cartoon of the original gerrymander, when the word came from. It looks like a salamander. They did that in Maryland. And they got this Republican out. It worked.
you should see the Georgia Senate and legislative districts. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like I live in Atlanta. My representative's district is like it looks like ribbons. like mm-hmm. really long, narrow districts all through Fulton County and Atlanta
mm-hmm.
because they want their representatives on the Fulton County as part of the Fulton County delegation
mm-hmm.
so they can have more influence in Atlanta.
Right. A lot of times they'll just follow like highways or roads. Which
oh,
was, you know,
not,
the
no,
way people,
no.
That's why they look like the ribbons or whatever. But in this case, yeah, it's maybe for other reasons. But yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, point is both parties do this. Right now, Republicans, though, they've lost, you know, two presidential elections in a row. And they're getting nervous that they're not going to be able to win that on the national level, fair and square, because they seem to have lost Latinos. Obviously, they don't get any African American votes to speak of, except for Archer Davis, I guess. And
Herman Cain.
You know, there's always someone. Yeah, Herman Cain. And then women go heavily for Democrats, and you know, just go down the list, young people, whatever, and they're like, and Asian Americans also heavily for Democrats. So, you know, they're sort of thinking maybe we have to try go to Plan B. Which I guess is, you know, this kind of stuff, which we're seeing here in Virginia.
But Lowell, who's pushing this stuff in Virginia when the governor and obviously Cuccinelli, who's running for governor, are not on board with this sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Who's pushing all of it?
Yeah, it is kind of funny that, the guy, there's a state senator who introduced this electoral college bill, Charles Carrico. He's from a rural part of Virginia, and actually his excuse for this is that he feels like he says that this is a way to give smaller communities a bigger voice. That was his don't ask me how, but he said the last election constituents were concerned that it didn't matter what they did, that more densely populated areas were going to outvote them. Okay.
Really?
So clear.
Yeah. People count more than, say, cattle.
Right.
That's just how democracy works. Well, we're talking a little bit here and there about this governor's race. Let's get deep into that as our last topic this evening. Ken Cuccinelli, he kind of pushed Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling aside from the Republican primary. But, of course, there's a chance, I guess, last I heard, that Bill Bowling still could run as independent. You've got Terry McAuliffe, who's pretty much running as unopposed to the Democratic nomination. And I just saw, as I was doing research, that somebody off the Real Housewives of D.C., a Tariq Saleh, is running as a Republican. First off, does this guy have any chance, or is he just clownable?
No. He has as much chance as, remember, you were really into Virgil Goode. Virgil Goode ended up getting 0.33% of the vote. I say probably Salahi will get something like that. So, yeah, I think we can forget. By the way, his wife, Michelle, and he were the – remember, they crashed the White House.
I thought that name was familiar.
Yeah, that's where he's from. And actually, she went off. We're getting into a little gossip here, but they apparently got divorced, and she went off and married – what's his name? Neil Schon or whatever from Journey? The piano player, I guess, of Journey, the rock one. Anyway, so this is, we're taking a little journey away from politics here. But anyway, as far as the governor's race next year, it looks like Bill Bowling is thinking about it. He's the lieutenant governor right now. He's been a Republican his whole life. He's actually quite conservative. He's not really any substantively, as far as we could tell, less conservative than Ken Cuccinelli or any of these other people. But he is very upset, I think. We could say fairly that he was pretty much guaranteed the governor's nomination. He stepped aside last time for Bob McDonnell, and the deal was that he was going to get to be governor this time. See, this is democracy. Isn't it great? I get to be governor this time. Well, you get to be governor next time.
It's my turn. We have that problem in Georgia, too.
I love it. Forget the voters. Who cares about them? But anyway, so now Bowling is unhappy because Ken Cuccinelli came in and said, well, wait a minute, I want to be governor too, and so I'm going to run against you. And then what they did was they changed it from a primary to a convention. The problem with a convention for Bowling is, you know, you're going to get all of the right-wing Tea Party types coming to a convention, and Bowling can't win that against Cuccinelli because Cuccinelli is a Tea Party hero. So that's it. So Bowling finally realized, he saw the writing on the wall, and he pulled out. And so, but he's going around talking to radio, giving radio interviews and saying he's like 50-50, he might run. So that's still a wild card. Then you got Terry McAuliffe is definitely going to be the Democratic nominee, and Ken Cuccinelli is going to be the Republican nominee. And the polling I'm seeing on this is it's very close. PPP came out with a poll January 8th, showed it McAuliffe 46, Cuccinelli 41. You throw Bowling into that mix, and they had an 8-point lead for McAuliffe, 40-32. So, but, you know, most voters don't even know these people, really. So it's really early. We'll see. And, you know, but they're starting to raise money. They're, Terry McAuliffe raised over $1 million in, like, a month. And, I mean, the guy is good at raising money.
He's good at raising money.
Yeah, that's
one
thing.
He's good at spending money, too, though.
Yeah, that too. So, you know, this is going to be a slugfest. Virginia's going to be it should be the marquee race of 2013. I mean, there's not, you know, New Jersey doesn't look like Christie's going to have a serious Democratic opponent. And so it looks like Virginia's governor's race is going to be, and it's going to be colorful. I mean, Terry McAuliffe is a colorful guy. I don't know if you ever saw him on, you know, with a bottle of rum on TV or whatever. You know, he's colorful. And then
well,
Ken
he
Cucci.
Came to Atlanta and, like, hosted a big thing at our local Democratic drinking establishment. And there were, like, it was, like, standing room only. There were, like, 600 people in the room.
Wow, really?
And he was a lot of fun.
And was he drinking?
I believe he was drinking.
Well, I don't know if someone got that on video, but maybe hopefully not. But anyway... And then Ken Cuccinelli, of course, is a very colorful, I guess you could say, figure. He's a hero of the Tea Party and all that. So, you know, that's going to be a knockdown dragout, I think. And then we've got, you know, 7 Republicans running for the lieutenant governor nomination, and you got a couple, and they're all right wing. And same thing for attorney general. There's no, like, moderates, basically. You know, anymore, I guess, that even bother trying. I mean, for in a convention, again, it's really tough. As a moderate, you'd be in a primary, you might have a chance because, you know, maybe all the far right wingers split the far right wing vote and maybe a moderate could sneak in. But in a convention, it wouldn't work that way. So that's kind of where we're at. I mean, we're coming into, you know, most states rest a little bit after the presidential year. Virginia, we're just gearing up, you know. We're just like, yeah, that was boring last year. This is going to be fun, you know. So 2013 will be will definitely be an interesting year politically in Virginia.
Yeah, well, Terry McAuliffe's pretty much just running unopposed. First thing, you talked about the Republicans having a convention. Now, did the Democrats go to a convention too, or is it just a primary election, which obviously won't be very interesting, at least at the top of the ticket.
Yeah, Democrats are having a primary in early June. I think it's like the 10th or 12th or something like that. Anyway, right around then. There won't be – McAuliffe's unopposed for governor, but there will be a primary for lieutenant governor. There's 2 candidates there for the Democrats. And for attorney general, there's 2 candidates there. So there'll be – my guess is turnout's going to be very low. You know, I don't think with the marquee, the governor's race not on the ballot, I can't imagine you're going to have huge numbers turning out for the lieutenant governor or attorney general. But, you know, I'll tell you, people don't think those positions are important, but notice where these governors keep coming from. It's from the attorney general's slot or maybe the lieutenant governor's slot. But, you know, Bob McDonnell was the attorney general of Virginia. He ran for governor in 2009, and he won. Now you have Ken Cuccinelli, who's the attorney general of Virginia, and he's going to run for governor, and hopefully he's not going to win, but he's running for governor, you know. And so that's like a feeder. It's like a minor league. It's like a farm system for the governor. And then they go on to potentially national races, U.S. Senate or even president, you know. So, people have to realize that these lower, quote-unquote, down-ballot races are very important. I mean, this is where these people get started off, you know, and you can't ignore these races. Plus, Attorney General of Virginia is a powerful position. They can do a lot of good, or they can do a lot of damage in 4 years. So, and Ken Cuccinelli has certainly done that. I mean, the guy's been on a crusade against climate science. He's gone after Professor Michael Mann, one of the leading climate scientists in the world. He's gone after Obamacare, filed federal lawsuits. He's filed lawsuits against the EPA. I mean, he's just been all over the place. So I wouldn't, I think these the attorney general and lieutenant governor's races are very interesting myself. But, of course, I'm a political junkie. But I think for a citizen of this city, they should care. Will they? I don't know, but they should.
Well, before we let you get out of here, Lowell, Tim or Catherine, any more questions for Lowell?
Not me.
I do.
Go ahead, Tim, that's fine. We got him.
Yeah, this is kind of an off-the-wall one, but you actually have a delegate, a GOP delegate, named, I believe, Robert Marshall, pushing a bill to mandate a study of an alternative currency for the state of Virginia. Is this dude serious?
Well,
monopoly money?
You need to define the word serious. I mean, like, this, for that guy, it's dead serious. Now, I have a nickname for Bob Marshall. I call him Sideshow Bob because I think he is not serious. Well, the thing is, on one level, he's a joke, okay? Let's face it. I mean, he's crazy and he's a joke. But on another level, he's deadly serious. I mean, he pushes this legislation, and some of it gets through. You know, Virginia's anti-gay marriage amendment that got on the ballot and got passed in 2006. So it's in the Constitution of Virginia now that gays and lesbians cannot get married. That was Bob Marshall's. That was the Marshall Newman amendment. It was Bob Marshall and a guy named last name Newman. So, but anyway, so this guy. But I don't think this currency bill is going to get too far. But I do think it got passed out of. Unless I'm mixing it up with another crazy Bob Marshall bill, because there's so many of them. But I think that it got passed out of the first, like, subcommittee, which is like, oh, my God. Or it might have been another crazy Bob Marshall bill. Because, I tell you, I lose track. There's so many crazy bills by this guy on every subject under this. Well, it's usually about sex, something to do with contraception, abortion, homosexuality, or something like the UN black helicopters or currency, gold, and who knows. So that provides our comic relief sometimes here, but these people are like I said, I mean they cause they can be dangerous too. I mean he did get that anti-gay marriage amendment through and other things too. So anyway, you had to mention him, huh?
I'm a fun guy that way. Okay, David.
Thanks a lot.
Well, Lowell, we know you blog at Blue Virginia. Anything going on the blog you want to tell our listeners about?
What's going on the blogs?
Yes, anything other than just all the news you can handle.
Oh my God! I mean, besides all the insanity. I mean, there's just fun stuff. I mean, I'll tell you our. State Senate Democratic minority leader, I guess he is now, even though it's a 20-20 tie. He's not considered the majority. I don't know. The Republicans say he's the minority leader, but he's hilarious. He's going on radio and going at it with the he was going at it the other day with one of the lieutenant governor candidates on the Republican side, calling him a nut job, and it's just a lot of fun. I mean, there's some colorful characters in this state, so we cover that, and we follow the transportation debate. That's a serious, serious issue. Eliminating the gas tax—that's a really. I mentioned it earlier, but that's something that's definitely taken up a fair amount of time. And then there's gun debates over guns. A lot of those bills are being killed. Democrats put in a lot of bills to try to tighten up background checks for gun show loophole. For just in general, tighten up background checks and reinstate one handgun a month. And those are all being killed in subcommittees in the House of Delegates. So there's a lot going on. I mean, it's just, but this electoral stuff, I guess, is kind of kind of just fun in a way, but like there's a lot of substantive stuff going on here. So, and you know, we're covering it. So check out Blue Virginia and you can see what's happening in Virginia.
Okay, sure thing. Hopefully it'll calm down there for you in Virginia, but anytime they're making news, we'll call on you, Lowell.
All right, great. Well, you guys
thanks, Lowell.
Take it easy. Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yes,
thank you,
thanks again to Lowell Feld. coming on, if you want to read more about him in Virginia politics, check out bluevirginia.us. Well, we were talking about Saxby Chambliss and his retirement. We talked about the Republican side. You know, we've mentioned, you know, pretty much every name has been mentioned other than maybe Nathan Deal. We didn't get on the Democratic side, so let's use the last 5 minutes to talk about that. One of the more interesting names that came up was, and I think it was on Blog for Democracy, Catherine, was John Barrow. And the thinking there was, is in a odd-year election, or not odd-year, but an off-year election, non-presidential, that John Barrow would have a tough time winning, even though people thought he'd have a tough time winning this time, and that if he just moved up, his race would be, you know, roughly the same battle, but the reward would be much greater because he'd get 6 years and get to serve statewide and be one of 100 instead of 435. Do you think John Barrow, he would take this race on? I think that he's already made a statement that he's not looking at it, but we all know things can change.
I honestly don't think he's interested in running for Senate. And I think that that's going to be a tough election for the Democrats. And not knowing who of the Republican clown car is going to come out as the candidate makes it that much trickier. Like, if we knew that it was going to be Paul Brown, I think that, you know, John Barrow might be able to, you know, rise to the occasion, so to speak. Like, I think that running against Paul Brown would I mean, because he says so many crazy things that you can bring all that up and point out that he's really not senatorial material. But if it's going to be, like, if the candidate's going to be Sonny Perdue, I mean, how do you fight back against the name recognition that Sonny Perdue has? Or Herman Cain, for that matter. So I think that it's going to be really tough to prepare, you know, a candidate or a couple of Democratic candidates, not because I think that whoever is the Republican candidate is going to make a big difference in who has the potential to win.
Yes. Well, Tim, I think that this race is good enough to field a good enough opportunity to field a quality candidate, but being a off year election is not a good enough election to risk an office. And so names in my mind that come to mind would be like a Shirley Franklin, Kathy Cox, maybe a Mark Taylor, someone that could have a profile, raise some money, be a real legitimate candidate that could win this race if it's a Paul Brown or someone, or Herman Cain or someone very beatable, or a Republican that just decides to talk about rape and having abortions and everything else like some of these other crazy folks do across the country. And that's somebody I would look at, somebody like that.
There's already, believe it or not, a robo-poll out there. targeting some counties, and some of the names going out there are Brown, Cain, Karen Handel, Brian Kemp, who we've not mentioned, Kingston, Tom Price, Lynn Westmoreland. That's on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, the poll asks about Stacey Abrams, Thurber Baker, Barra, Jason Carter, Michael Thurman, DuBose Porter, and Kasim Reed. Okay, which one of those names grabs you?
Well, Reed would grab you if he could, you know, still be mayor of Atlanta and run. I think he stands out as a really interesting name. But then Shirley Franklin served two terms. Everybody considers her a fine mayor of Atlanta, and she's really popular all across the metro area, including northern Republican suburbs. So I think you would get all the positives of Kasim Reed with some new things, like she is a female, and we know of Georgia's long history of not electing women, and to be a chance to right that wrong, if you will. And she risked nothing. Tim, which name stands out to you?
Well, I don't know. I know that Mayor Reed was being very coy about this, but I think former office holders is people we ought to look at on the Democratic side. Somebody like Thurman, for instance, perhaps jumping in there. And on the Republican side, I really think it's going to be one of those Congress critters. Westmoreland or Price immediately comes to mind. Catherine, what about Shirley Franklin? You're in Atlanta.
I don't think Shirley Franklin is interested in serving anymore. I think she's happy with the work that she's doing now with Spelman and with some of the other initiatives that she's working on. I don't know all of them, but I would be surprised if she jumped into that race. I do think she would be a great candidate, and I would love to have her in the Senate. She'd be great in the Senate, but I don't think she's interested. The rumor is that John Barrow doesn't want to run, but that's like David said. They always say that.
Politics1.com is reporting that Newt Gingrich and Herman Cain have all said they're not going to run, but of course things change. Next week we'll discuss that and much, much more. Because it's Super Bowl Sunday, don't expect us at 7 o'clock. It's, three-quarters of the TV's on will be turned to the Super Bowl, and I'm sure, two to three of ours will too. So we're probably going to come to you early in the day. I'm just guessing 2 o'clock is what we've done in the past. So if you want to tune in live, it'll be an early afternoon episode. Of course, you can podcast it later on, and you won't even miss a beat. Until then, this is the Gudzu Vine.
Good night.
Good night, guys. We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America